Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, just yesterday was the bad martini, where President Obama was once again trudging out to the Rose Garden, pretending he was doing something new by launching an investigation into the supposedly evil oil speculators. Jim had a great analogy of shadowy John Grisham villains somehow behind the scenes, a few of them manipulating one of the world's largest commodities, if not the largest. And we got good news and a good martini the very same day on the very same subject from a surprising source, and that's Jessica Yellen of CNN, grilling a guy named Brian Deese in the press room. Brian Deese is deputy director of the National Economic Council, and Jessica Yellen had a pretty simple question. She says, you know, you've been saying that you're launching these investigations through the Department of Justice and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. I've checked with these people, and they really don't have any concrete cases of this. So do you actually have evidence this is happening, or is this just a political smokescreen? Here's her question and his attempt at an answer.
This entire move by the White House today is premised on the assumption that there is illegal action. So what concrete evidence can you point to suggest this isn't just optics?
Right. So I would say a couple of things. The first, again, you know, as I just stated earlier, in 2011, the CFTC filed a civil complaint against several oil companies for potential manipulative activity. Likewise, the FTC has an open investigation into anti-competitive behavior. But I think that there's a broader issue at stake here.
Of course, it's a broader issue because you have no facts to back up your case. Not exactly the most confident response there, Jim, from Mr. Deese. Possible manipulation, possible investigations. After all the hullabaloo in the Rose Garden the past few years, that seems pretty thin.
Yeah, I would also point out to the lead editorial in the Washington Post today, they summarize, the argument boils down to maybe the CFTC will find something we don't really know what. That'd be the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. They conclude, no one should imagine this will help much at the pump, no matter how much the White House talks of the urgent imperative to protect vulnerable consumers. So when CNN and the Washington Post are basically saying, everything you're proposing today isn't really going to do anything, maybe they talk about the idea of upgrading the technology at this CFTC, fine, get them the fancy computers. I'm sure the GSA can spare the money. But really, in the end, this is, you know, stage managing, much ado about nothing. Sound and fury signifying nothing, you could say. And I think the fact that so much of the coverage emphasized this is good news. If Obama had proposed these sorts of things in 2008, I have very little doubt that the coverage would have been much more glowing and supportive and you know, taking it seriously. I think that as much as we may gripe about the mainstream media, with good reason, that at times these folks do get tired of this, they do, you know, get tired of things that are treated as really huge deals and are actually, you know, taking a very tiny issue, i.e. the Buffett rule, etc. So good for CNN, good for the Washington Post, not often the subjects of our first martinis, but credit to them for observing that the emperor has, if not no clothes, only a few threads here on this particular issue.
And I'll also drink to the fact that the grilling in the press room actually translated into skeptical reports. If the day-to-day reporting actually followed the tenor in the press room, you'd think that there'd be pretty balanced reporting. Usually we don't get that, but on this one we did. So kudos to those who are part of that as well. On to the bad martini now, and this should catch no one by surprise, and Jim has chronicled this over time. President Obama has now cleared $5 trillion in debt since taking office. That's just 39 months since he took office. By comparison, it took from the beginning of the nation to March of 1996 to rack up that much debt. He's already surpassed President Bush, who racked up $4.9 trillion in debt over 8 years, which is certainly nothing to be happy about. Jim, this guy's into record territory, and if he gets reelected, who knows what we're headed towards?
Yeah, it's one of the things that, you know, it's worth noting that Barack Obama said that running up the debt by $4 trillion was immoral and un-American. He said this on the campaign trail back in 2008. So I guess running up $5 trillion is hunky-dory. You can make the case that the Bush administration dropped the ball on the deficit and did not really pay attention to this issue, dropped the ball on controlling government spending. And all of that is accurate, although it's worth saying that the year-to-year deficits that we were running up in years like 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, by today's standards, they were pretty mild. We're talking about a mere, in the low hundreds of billions. I can't believe I just used that phrase. But, I mean, every year Obama's been president, it's been well north of $1 trillion each year. And so one of the things that's kind of just mind-boggling about this is that, look, we elected someone who really just doesn't care about the debt. You figure if he really worried about it, he'd do something about it. He doesn't want to do something about it. He doesn't want to give up any of his priorities. His big thing that he always points to is Obamacare. But as we all know, Obamacare is worsening the deficit. It is not improving the deficit. So the martini is bad. Hopefully Americans will recognize this. I still have this nagging doubt that there are lots of Americans who just don't think about the debt, and as a result, it's not there. It's not a even though it is a financial Godzilla, it is not an actually radioactive 10,000-foot lizard that is crushing, you know, smashing through cities. And it's unfortunate, Greg, that sometimes you need problems to be that vivid and visual to get people to do it. Maybe we need a giant paperwork creature that we can just kind of use the creative geniuses at Industrial Light and Magic to use some CGI smashing us to commit, you know, to illustrate just what a big problem this is. Because the lack of that, you know, I just don't understand.
All right. Well, on to, I guarantee you, unprecedented third martini. First, it was stay-at-home moms. Now pet owners could be a little bit peeved at the White House. We'll find out. Of course, Mitt Romney, it was revealed not that long ago, back in the early 1980s, kept his dog up in some sort of carrier on top of the car, and everyone was horrified. David Axelrod even, you know, tweeted about it with a picture of President Obama and Beau saying this is how loving pet owners take care of their animals and so forth. Well, now it turns out that the president, as a child, ate dog. This is from Dreams from My Father. Not sure why this wasn't made public before, but here's the quote. With Lolo, and that's his stepfather, I learned how to eat small green chili peppers raw with dinner, with plenty of rice, and away from the dinner table. I was introduced to dog meat, tough, snake meat, tougher, and roasted grasshopper, crunchy. Like many Indonesians, Lolo followed a brand of Islam that could make room for the remnants of more ancient animist and Hindu faiths. He explained that a man took on the powers of whatever he ate. One day soon, he promised he would bring home a piece of tiger meat for us to share. So I think the criticism of Mitt Romney with the pet in the carrier is probably going to be dissipating now, although the administration is already very critical of the Romney campaign and others for making fun of this, Jim, because what they're really doing is picking on a 6 to 10-year-old boy, which is how old Obama was during those years.
It's worth noting, and you say this, why this hasn't, you know, this didn't come out earlier. Look, Dreams from My Father has been out for years and years and years, and I read it, and I know I read that sentence, and perhaps, you know, just thinking it was not that significant. And I think you can argue that, you know, the dietary choices of young Barack Obama, probably not having that much choice. Probably it's his stepfather doing the cooking and deciding what the family is going to eat on any given day. I would argue this is not a good reason to vote against Barack Obama. But if the liberals are seriously going to argue that the treatment of Seamus up on the car carrier up on the roof is some sort of grand illustrative character revealing moment that that Americans should consider, well then by golly, let's make this election about who did what to a dog, because I'm going to go out on a limb and say, look, putting the carrier on the roof is not as strange and unappealing and horrifying to Americans as eating a dog. I think this is kind of just a defensive deployment of an anecdote to kind of illustrate this. And just kind of the fascinating thing about this is, you know, obviously last night on Twitter, Obama dog recipes was the trending topic. It's kind of fascinating. You will see some liberals trying to insist that the Seamus story is really, really important, but the fact that Obama ate dog isn't. And I think they're going to have a tough situation making that case. So I think that this is enforcing a certain doggy detente between the two campaigns. And, you know, the one thing I like about this is that last night, Eric Fernstrom, the Romney guy who was well known for Etch-a-Sketch, is, you know, among those who kind of, he didn't, you know, say anything really vividly, you know, he didn't, you know, issue a press release of, you know, Barack Obama's war on dogs or anything. He just pointed the Axelrod photo and say, in retrospect, this is, you know, there's an ominous tone to this picture. And it's subtle, it's funny, it just kind of gets it out there. But enough people then see, it's like, what's he talking about? And of course, you know, Jake Tapper and other folks have now done short, lighthearted pieces. The headline on Jake Tapper's piece was, Obama as a boy ate dog meat. Not the headline the Obama campaign wanted to see today. And I think all of this is designed to reach out to low information, relatively apolitical dog owners who don't think at all about politics at all. And the hope is, you know, on each campaign is that the Obama folks were hoping they'd hear the Seamus story and dog owners would say, oh, I can't vote for that guy. But now they may hear the story of Obama eating dogs and say, oh, my God, I can't vote for that guy. And you end up with a circumstance in which these people need to stay home. Or they conclude that eating Rover is worse than putting him on the roof. And it's a bizarre place for our politics to attend. But it's kind of a, you know, if one side is going to play with these little side issues, well, all right, the other side can point to their side issues. If the Obama campaign is uncomfortable with this and they much rather talk about the debt or the economy or gas prices or job creation, that's fine with me. Ready when you are, guys. Let's talk about your record, since that may be more comfortable than why Bo looks so nervous these days.
Now they're going to change the subject to war on women or class warfare or something like that. That seems to be the area where they're more comfortable. And I'm a little bit frightened by the idea of someone casting a presidential vote based on the treatment of pets by the potential candidates. At the same time, though, I think PETA is going to have to sit this one out, Jim. I'm not sure they can endorse either one. And certainly if they were behind Obama, they got to reconsider now.
Dog owners for dog eaters.
We'll see what...
it's just a dog's breakfast of a campaign.
It is. I hope the exit pollers throw that question out there in November just to see if it moves the needle at all. Jim, have a great day and a great time at the Bloggers Convention. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.